In 2005, two brothers hit the road to chase demons and fight monsters. You know, like you do. After 15 years, they made television history and built a community of dedicated and lasting fans.
Sure did.
I'm Rob Benedict, and I played God, a.k.a. Chuck Shirley.
Yeah, you are, and yeah, you did. And I'm Richard Spade Jr., and I played the Archangel Gabriel, a.k.a. the Trickster, a.k.a. Loki. I also had the privilege of directing a bunch of episodes of the show.
Have a few more a.k.a.s, why don't you? Jeez.
A.k.a. you're a jerk.
Though we've been involved with the series for years and multiple seasons, we never sat down and watched the entire show.
Oh, that's not true anymore. Now we're deep into it. We are going episode by episode and diving in with the folks who made it to bring you an insider's point of view and some great behind-the-scenes stories from the writers, producers, crew, and actors. And you're getting our pure, honest, unfettered reviews.
And along the road, let me tell you, we're becoming fans.
Buddy, we are super fans.
We've heard you saying it for years, and we finally get what all the excitement's about. This show holds up after all this time and deserves to be watched and rewatched.
We will be hitting on some spoilers, so consider yourself warned. And if you have any angry emails you want to send, please direct them to Bobo.
Thank you for joining our journey and listening to Supernatural Then and Now. Hey, everybody, this is Rob Benedict.
Wow, that was perky. I mean, you've got great energy. I guess I'll try to match it. And it's me, Richard Spade Jr.
I was mid-stretch.
We're talking about season 4, episode 14, Robbie. You know that?
Indeed we are.
What's the title, Robbie?
Sex and Violence.
Canceled. I just canceled you. Sorry, buddy.
I thought you were going to say, yes, but what's the title of the episode?
Either one works. Anyway, sorry, you're canceled. Next week, we'll be back with our new host.
Hosts. Hey, everybody, it's the holidays.
Ho, ho, ho.
Which means it's time to buy your favorite person that merch that you love from the Supernatural Then and Now podcast. That's right.
Wait a minute. You have to buy your favorite person merch that you love? What about merch that they would love? Shouldn't we be getting them something that they want?
Right, right. Don't just treat others. Treat yourself.
Right, exactly. Or treat yourself, as it's written. Listen, Supernatural Then and Now, the podcast, has some really cool merch. You got to check it out at spnthenandnow.com. You're going to get access to a fresh inventory of stickers, shirts, and of course, Rob's dumb notebook. Get yourself some of that. You're going to love it. I saw a couple of those at the Supernatural Convention, the Rob's dumb notes.
Yeah.
Real funny. Anyway, go check it out. Really, you're going to be glad you did. Get that special someone, something that you know they'll love, not that dumb thing you're thinking about getting them. Get them Supernatural Then and Now merch.
And the two full beards t-shirts.
That's rock solid. Rock solid is what it is. Yeah. All right, Robbie, do me a solid and summarize this episode in that fresh, off-the-cuff way.
All right. So Adam comes home from work and is greeted by his wife, Vicky. Adam is visibly agitated. Vicky tells him she wants to go to a friend's birthday party on Saturday night. Adam seems to get even more upset, then kills her with a meat tenderizer.
That was a big leap. You know, kind of annoyed, and then pummeling her with the meat tenderizer.
I know. It's disturbing, too. Mm-hmm. Back in a motel room, Dean can overhear Sam in the bathroom talking about demonic signs. When Sam comes out, Dean pretends to be asleep. When Dean wakes up, Sam tells him that he just heard from Bobby about three men who recently killed their wives in Bedford, Iowa. The boys arrive in Bedford, pose as FBI investigators, and question Adam, one of the accused husbands, in jail. So Adam confesses and is remorseful, but he also admits to being in love with a stripper named Jasmine. He only knows she works at a strip club called the Honey Wagon.
Robert, come on, man.
Sam questions Dr. Kara Roberts, the doctor who took blood samples from the accused. They seem to be flirting with each other. She tells Sam that all men have high levels of oxytocin in their systems. Yep, that's the hormone associated with being in love.
Nobody has to tell you that, Robbie. And by the way, I like the fact it says they seem to be flirting. It was like neon sign, like
I know.
Petting each other's knee flirting.
I know, get a room. The brothers head to the Honey Wagon, the strip club that all the men visited before committing murder. Intel from Bobby says they might be dealing with a siren, a creature from Greek mythology that disguises itself as a beautiful woman to lure and tempt men. At the club, a man falls for a stripper named Belle. He takes her to his home where he cares for his sick mother. She tells the man to kill his mother so they can be together, and he does. Back at the hotel, the boys are on the phone with Bobby, who tells them the only way to kill a siren is with a dagger dipped in the blood of one of its victims, thereby exposing it to its own venom. Sam and Dean return to Dr. Roberts' office with the intention of collecting some blood from one of the samples.
Dr. Roberts.
That's right. There at the hospital, they run into Nick Monroe, who introduces himself as an FBI agent. Nick challenges Sam and Dean on being in the FBI. After a call to Bobby, posing as an FBI director, Nick is convinced Sam and Dean are legit agents. Nick then shares that he believes there's a connection between the strippers and the murders. Dean and Nick head back to the strip club to investigate further. Sam hangs back to try to get a blood sample from Dr. Roberts.
Dr. Roberts.
You know what I mean? Try to get a blood sample from Dr. Roberts.
Dr. Roberts.
Nick and Dean seem to have a lot in common. Cars, classic rock, their sense of humor. Nick shares that a hyacinth flower might be a clue. Dean remembers seeing one in Dr. Roberts' office.
Dr. Roberts.
Meanwhile, Sam and Dr. Roberts,
Dr. Roberts,
can't find a blood sample because they seem to be stolen. So they make love.
They do what you do. We can't get a blood sample. They hump.
No, but for real. Later on the phone, Dean shares the theory about the flower and accuses Dr. Roberts, of being the siren. He also figures out that Sam slept with her. He tells Sam that he can't be trusted and he'll handle the rest of the case on his own. Dean and Nick stake out Dr. Roberts.
Dr. Roberts.
While in the car, they share a flask, and Dean tells Nick that he thinks the venom is the siren's saliva. Nick confirms this and tells Dean that Sam needs to be out of the way so that Dean can be with his perfect brother. This is after he drank from the...
They shared a flask, man. Saliva. They swapped saliva.
That's right.
They didn't do it the old-fashioned way by making out. They just shared a flask.
Right. That's right. So back at the motel, Dean and Nick encounter Sam. Nick poisons Sam, too, and tells the brothers to fight it out, and the winner can be with him forever. The brothers fight violently and reveal some hidden feelings. Dean feels Sam is hiding things from him. Dean gets the better of Sam and is about to take him out when Bobby appears, stabs Dean, and then stabs the siren, breaking the spell. The next day, Bobby leaves, but Sam and Dean are there awkwardly apologizing to each other for what they said.
All right, let's talk about this episode, Robbie.
Lots unpacked here.
Lots unpacked, man. I love the setup. I thought the setup was great. The teaser is really awesome.
Scary, really.
Yeah.
Like when somebody murders someone else in cold blood for no reason, it's
jarring.
Wild. And same with the boy who kills his mother. It's just like, and you hear the cries of his mom from the other room. And
that's after they made love by the fire.
After they made love by the fire, not the mom.
It is so... Yeah, there's a lot of creepy setups to this.
And a couple of funny things. I like that when we talked about the Jasmine line, and I also like that, like, Dean is so Dean in that he's excited to go to the strip club.
Yeah, I love that. He made a whole bit of like, dude, we're finally doing a case that takes place at a strip club.
Yeah, you know, yeah.
That whole line is great.
Yeah, but I was watching this on the airplane. It was quite embarrassing to be watching this. It's a very intimate episode.
Dude, this is one of the cleanest things I've ever seen you watch on an airplane. You always are watching some HBO show with, like, I don't know, nudity galore. Well, you watched that series, Nudity Galore, and
it's a great show. I stand by it. But yeah, it's also embarrassing when it's a show that you were on. You just feel like you're...
But you weren't on that episode. It wasn't like you were watching yourself naked.
I know. Anyway... But all of that being said, I had a few issues that I'm trying to work out. I'm trying to figure it out.
I had two, and I want to sort of step lively here because I don't want to, like, go trotting through mud and then step on the white carpet. But
no, and I'm sure people have theories about this episode. Here's the thing, just factually, that didn't track for me.
All right.
I like the idea of a siren. I think that's an interesting myth, and I like in Oh Brother, Where Art Thou, they do it so well. The three sirens they come across are singing the song, and it's more about the spell that they put the men into than it's about the sex, truly. But they're women. The sirens are women, and that's the whole point of a siren, right?
Right.
And so I don't understand how Nick is a siren if he's a guy. Then it rings a little bit differently.
Unless he was a guy using sexual energy to lure a victim. You know what I mean?
Right,
like,
but
I feel like that could work both ways. But in this case, he's not using sexual energy.
No, he, like, wants to be his brother.
Like a bro.
Yeah.
It still felt a little... I mean, look, once they started drinking out of the flask together, felt like Nick was hitting on Dean to me. I mean, that's...
Yeah, there was a little bit of that, yes.
It didn't seem very bro-ish at that point.
Right. And so that's why it didn't scan for me, because if it's one or the other... You know what I mean?
Right, it's either sexual in nature, and that's part of the weaponry, or it's not,
right,
is what you're saying.
Right, right. And then it doesn't make sense that he's like, the brothers need to duke it out and the winner gets to be with me.
Made no sense either, because be with me should have a sexual intonation. But right. What he was saying is to pal around.
Yeah, right.
Which we both know, based on the earlier parts of the episode, wouldn't have happened, because once they convince their victim to kill the partner, they go. So this dude would have had Sam kill Dean or Dean kill Sam and then just walked away.
Right. But, you know, in terms of the overall arc of the season, I'm interested in, and I liked sort of the things that were, you know, the boys are headed for a fight. You know, there's lots going on,
right.
Secrets on both sides, you know, things they don't know, and they're frustrated with each other. And that part of it made sense. But the way that we got there just didn't. I was liking the episode, and then I liked the turn. Like, ooh, this guy's actually a bad guy. Wait a minute, how if that a character had been?
I thought once the dude did the saliva bit with the flask, he was going to morph into a female.
Right, that would have made sense.
And then revealed himself to be the siren that he was.
Right, just simply from the texts that they're reading, like it was always a woman, and in the episode, it's a strip club that's luring men in. I mean, that's the whole the vibe of it. So yeah, and that I would have bought if he morphs into a lady. Also, if Dr. Roberts is not actually a siren, then it's not incredibly realistic to me that she's just this hot doctor who's ready to have sex in her office.
Okay, here's where I think you're wrong. Jared Padalecki.
Hot dude.
So a lot of doctors and a lot of people in the medical community that take issue with what you just said, because they would like to have adult relations with Jared Padalecki in their office.
Okay, well, as a patient, that's true.
who's the patient after Jared Padalecki?
Exactly.
Next, Rob?
Will the doctor see me now, please? I've been waiting for 2 hours.
And you go in and it's just a shambles?
Yeah. Ugh.
I have a trick knee that I'd like to discuss, but first I found a man's underpants here on the table. Here's one of the things that bumped for me. So that didn't bump for me. Honestly, I felt like that actress was great and Jared was great in the scenes, and there's a lot of tension, and it just felt like alcohol was involved and there was flirting, and it just felt like an intense thing.
Sure. You know? It just a little too soap opera-y for me,
right.
If she's not a siren seducing him. But that being said, look, all the actors were awesome. I even thought the individual scenes were written well. The directing was great.
Yeah, the dude playing the male siren was good. I mean, it's not an indictment of him at all.
And the hot doctor was great too.
Right. She's great. Here's the one thing that really threw me off, and it maybe it's the sign of the times, but it seemed really weird that Sam, at the end, when Dean is like, so you want to go by and say adios to the doctor? He's like, nah. I'm like, that just seemed really weird. Because she hadn't been part of the problem. She hadn't been a siren.
And it's not,
she was somebody he was genuinely attracted to.
Right.
They're really hot for each other. They got all over each other. It ended well. Yes. He was kind of like reveling in it when Dean was calling him out on it. Like, why would you then just bolt? Like, it kind of made Sam look like a real dick in that moment, I thought.
And not like Sam.
No.
That's something Dean would do.
Empathetic guy that has been built up in previous seasons.
Right.
I didn't like that bit. I didn't think that didn't track for me. And even the way Dean reacted, like, I love him and leave him, huh? It just felt like a real throwback to a time that you're like, that seems strange. But it also seemed out of character.
Right. Dean would have done that, but Sam, not for Sam. So, you know, all this being said, I didn't dislike it. Like we hardly ever dislike any of the episodes. There have been a couple stinkers. I wouldn't call this a stinker.
Oh, no, I don't think it's a stinker. Because the concept, when you would see the sirens in the mirror, was awesome.
Oh, that was good.
And
was
so really good. Creepy.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
You could buy that these guys were being lured to this kind of situation. You know, I thought it was a clever and well set up. I just, like you, found some potholes in there.
Yeah. So what are we calling this?
Well, you want me to, I'll start.
Beard-wise, you already had some.
Yeah, I got one. I'm giving this John Oates mustache. Hall & Oates.
Okay.
Because John Oates mustache is, that's a force to be reckoned with. That's a powerful mustache. But it just stops short of being a full beard. You know what I mean?
Right.
It's intense. It's a signature facial trait.
Okay.
It really does sort of make a statement, and it's thick and impressive.
Yeah.
And you want to touch it. You want to smell it.
Yeah. Yeah.
You want to clip a little bit off of it and put it in a jar and put it on your desk and say, hey, I got some of Jono's mustache. But it's just this side of full beard.
I'm going to go Keanu Reeves beard because it's patchy.
That's great. Is his day to day beard or?
He has day to day when Keanu Reeves grows a beard.
Right.
And he's Keanu Reeves. He's a cool dude.
Yeah.
He's a really cool dude. But he's got a patchy beard. You said, it stops short. There are too many bumps to call it a full beard. But it's Keanu Reeves, you know? I'm still excited about the next episode.
Listen, if there's a movie starring Keanu Reeves and John Oates, opening weekend, I'm there. You know what I mean? So these are not bad reviews. They're just not, they're not the home runs we sometimes hand out.
Well said. Something tells me that the fans have thoughts about this episode. I can just hear them yelling them at the...
you can hear them?
At their podcast
yelling machine. Yelling at the podcast machine? They have a podcast machine?
Yeah. Don't you have a podcast
Dr. machine? Roberts? All right. Well, that was a good one. Nice work.
Listen, we've got a really fun interview today. We love going into the crew and the people that help make the episodes beyond what the person you see on the screen. So this, we have a great interview with Patty Henderson, and she was the script supervisor for 3 seasons of Supernatural. Additionally, she has a long list of credits that include some great film and TV shows. Joyride, Lost in Space, Good Boys, A Series of Unfortunate Events, which my kids love, Fringe, and Smallville. She's also directed several award-winning short films. And here's our interview with Patty Henderson. We're so happy to have you here. Thank you so much for being with us, Patty.
Thank you.
We ask everyone who worked on the show, what's your Supernatural origin story? Like, when did it start for you getting the job?
Okay, well, I think I ended up on the show. What we were doing and what we still often do here in Vancouver is we alternate episodes with script supervisors so that you have an opportunity to prep, shoot, maybe do your second unit, and then you're not constantly chasing your tail. So I think one of the script supervisors left from season one, and she retired, and they were looking for someone. And I had been doing some work on Smallville. I think it's because I had sprained my ankle mountain biking, and I was doing second units because I couldn't be walking around on set all the time. So I was on Smallville doing that. And because of that crossover between Smallville, Supernatural, Jensen, that they asked me if I wanted to join. And I went and interviewed. I think at that time I interviewed with Kim Manners.
That's great. Let's kind of dive into specifics about your job, because a lot of the people who listen to this podcast aren't industry insiders. So describe to us the role of a script supervisor.
A script supervisor. Thank you for calling it a script supervisor, first of all. A lot of people now have this nickname calling it scripty. As
I bet you don't love that.
We just I've heard love that. That's like, you know, the hair and makeup designers being called the pretty department.
That's good to know. That's good to know. I mean,
that's very good.
We do that, and we always call people their job as if it's their last name.
100%. Yes.
Yeah.
And And initially, it was called continuity supervisor, but then script supervisor. Mm-hmm. So sometimes you'll see on credits continuity or script supervisor. So that is one and the same. So script supervisor does also continuity of story, of action. So every department actually has their own continuity. Continuity of action when we start filming, but also of story. So we'll do breakdowns for where we are in the story, what time it is, if people have got a cut, then we coordinate like how long it would have happened from day one to day 12 or whatever. It's so we're continuity of all things, but we're not about all the continuity. Everyone has their own.
Right, right.
Right, so the Omega department needs to make that cut look the same every right. time. But from the continuity department, from the continuity aspect of your job, you're there to make sure, okay, we have day one, night one, day two, night two.
Yes.
How long does this cut exist on his head? And yeah. if we're shooting this scene, then there should be no cut or just light traces of it. So I want to just sort of dive into that definition as well for continuity. Continuity, which we use a lot in film and TV, but for the uninitiated, that means keeping things consistent, like wardrobe pieces, makeup elements, character development, depending on how the character is supposed to be or not be there.
What hand are you holding the coffee cup in?
Which way did you turn? Did you like turn over to your right shoulder or your left shoulder when you went back to talk to somebody? Those things are incredibly important because they affect the editing dramatically and the story arc. And you are, of your many tasks, keeping a sharp eye on that kind of stuff, correct?
You're the on set, like you're keeping the notes for the editor then to go back and go. So if they ended up using a take where the coffee cup switches hands, that's not always your fault because you've told them that in take five, he had it in his right hand and the take two, but they wanted for the story, they wanted this take to go together. And so that's why sometimes it ends up changing hands. Yes.
And also it's not, you know, actors aren't puppets. We're not puppeteering you as an actor. So, you know, often actors will be unconscious about their mechanics. Some actors are very conscious about the mechanical parts of continuity. And also, is it important for the director? You know, that we sit with the director, we are the person who is the on-set representative for the editor. So we're trying to make sure that the director has everything they need to cut it, and also for post-production editing to be able to cut it smoothly.
Hey there, this is Richard Speight Jr., and I hope you're enjoying the episode, but we need to pull over for a few seconds for some messages.
You can sense it calling out to you.
New reality seeks you.
Join the journey to save Anomaly.
Place where sound is magic. The only way to enter the world is by looking inward.
Along the way, you'll learn potions, chants, and enchantments that will help you both in that reality and yours.
So, answer the call and let your campaign begin.
Featuring the voices of Ruth Connell from Supernatural and Dead Boy Detectives.
There are ordeals ahead, yet with guidance, you will face them head on without fear.
Todd Stashwick from Star Trek Picard and 12 Monkeys.
When the time arrives, wherever your journey takes you, be there with no attachments.
And R&B singer NC Gray.
There are worlds, realms, dimensions, and realities beyond yours.
Anomaly is a role-playing meditation podcast that takes you into a world of magic and fantasy. You'll be invited to imagine yourself in scenarios such as learning to cast a tranquility spell or exploring a land vanquished by a dragon, but all connected by a shared mythology. The goal of guided fantasy role-playing meditations are to help you cultivate a sense of wonder, curiosity, balance, and joy in your inner world. Role-playing meditation is a form of escapism and relaxation, as well as a creative outlet for the imagination. The first campaign is an introduction to the world of Anomaly, its lands, magic, and secrets. In the 8 chapters, you'll stretch your imagination, learn to center yourself, offer forgiveness, find confidence, relieve stress, and stop racing thoughts. Your true self will emerge, allowing you to manage your goals and dreams without confusion, distrust, or self-doubt. You can find it on Spotify, Apple, and wherever you listen to podcasts. Or visit seekanomaly.com to learn more. Anomaly spelled with an I-E, not a Y.
Seek Anomaly. Hear its magic.
Thanks for listening. Now, back to the episode.
Here's a question. Rich is a director, and so he might know that. I know he knows this as well, but let's say, like, we're talking about this episode 14, episode 14, season 4, and let's say there's a shot of Dean and this guy Nick in the car.
Yeah.
And they're outside a bar surveying somebody, and they and it starts with the sort of a master shot of them in the car. We see someone walk in. What if a shot like that isn't in the script? And the director was like, this is what I'd like to do, actually. I'd like to have this shot here, even though the scene on the script starts with them already in the car. I'd like to start and just do this sort of establishing shot that's not in the script. Is that possible? Do you, as a script supervisor, sort of write that in? We've added this shot? Or obviously you've pre-planned it.
Yeah, I would just put at the beginning, you know, establisher bar, and write it above, you know, let's say it says interior car, but I would write just above that exterior establishing car bar. And then, so yes, those are things that we write in. Yeah, things like that. So on set, most of the time, especially on Supernatural, everybody was very prepared. I know that Charles, I had done quite a few episodes with Charles Beeson, and he was always prepared. He was a very, like, quiet, in that British way where they're quiet, but then they have a very good sense of humor that sneaks out every once in a while, you know.
Yeah.
Very kind, very prepared, but quiet, not an incredibly boisterous individual. But yeah, as you could see from that episode, it had to be very choreographed because we had scenarios where people are looking in the mirror, and then, spoiler alert, the creature is the image. The siren is the image. So many things had to be very choreographed. And it was a big fight sequence between the boys, which was interesting. You know, that was, I think, a really big episode for an arc.
Because it
was interesting, you know, coming in season 2 and 3. During season 3, that was the short season because of the writer's strike. And I know that Eric Kripke had written up to 3 seasons. So we weren't sure that we were going ahead for even any further. So I know the guys, the boys, they were still just renting houses, you know. It was like, at some point they're going back home to wherever they, Texas or LA or.
Yeah.
So it wasn't a for sure that we were having any more episodes. So there was a story that happened and kind of came to its completion. And then when we got picked up for 4 and 5 at that point, you know, up to 5, then I know Eric had to write for 5 seasons. So adding another 2 seasons. So it was interesting that season 4, so many characters came forward. You know, that was Ruby and, Misha.
Castiel.
Yeah. Misha. Yeah. So many people all of a sudden came in that continued, or, you know, I mean, the Ruby storyline, I mean, changed Jared's life.
Yeah, for sure.
Here's a question, because you're talking about that being a big story point, the fight. Obviously, your job is analytical. It's minutia. It's watching detail and helping, you know, be sure you're the eyes on the shoulder for a lot of different departments. At the same time, do you get invested in the story? Do you find yourself following and being having almost like an emotional support system for the actual story of the boys in this case?
100%. I mean, that is a large part, I think, of a script supervisor's job, is to be the story script advocate, so that, you know, we oftentimes, things, even with writers, something would come in a script and you go, oh, but they did this last year, so why would they go do that? Like, you know, they're really participating in their lives, and you're so involved in the characters' lives that, you know, just certain things, like Dean drives the car, Why is, you know, all of a sudden they have Sam driving, let's say, in an episode, and you're like, well, why? Why? Those are things that I would actually ask, because it's story continuity. And yeah, you get 100% invested, because we're also watching for emotion, looks, eye lines, you know, there's, let's say an actor, Jensen was great at this kind of thing, where he, you would get through a scene and maybe the ending is Sam's line, but Jensen, if it was meant to be like, maybe he wasn't going to say anything, he wasn't going to get the last word, but he was aware that Sam just made a choice or something. He's very good at giving a look.
Acting through that beat, non-dialogue
beat. Correct, acting through the non-dialogue beat. And, you know, sometimes I could even be watching for that. Like, maybe it says in the script, Dean rolls his eyes. Now, not that I'm not telling the director how to direct, because my job, that's not my job. I'm there to be with the script and facilitate the script. But let's say I might bring up it in a way that would, let's say Dean never did it. And I might say, do you want Dean to have any reaction at the end or just get up? Like, sometimes you're leading.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, you have to lead the witness a bit.
You have to be a little political.
Yeah.
Directors are very pressured. They're under pressure to get the episode, get the shots, make everybody happy, you know, all these things. So sometimes they have a shot list. Like Kim Manners had a very intricate shot list. He was very specific. And other people, you know, had a shot list in their mind and didn't share it per se. But it's my job to bring things like that up. And sometimes, you know, if we have, let's say, three cameras, I'm watching and listening. So I'm going along, making sure that they're saying all the correct lines. If they don't say the correct lines, I bring it up to the director and like, oh, when did he, you know, when did that happen? Right. Oh, I'll get that in coverage, or we should have that again because he's walking across the room. So all these things I'm tracking as we're going. I'm also watching where the camera's going, who they're on. And sometimes, you know, a director gets involved and let's say there's one wide shot and two medium shots. So three cameras, maybe they're watching the wide, or maybe they're watching like the main person talking and they're not watching everything else. And maybe there's one camera that's doing some swinging from the actor's face to props. And did they get all the moments that we wanted? And so I'm watching all of that while listening to the script words, making sure they're saying it, also taking notes about continuity so I can match, and making notes for post-production. So it's this multitasking. And often, you know, the director will rely on me and say, oh, if we didn't have, let's say, video playback, they'd say, well, did you see if we got, you know, Dean's line, and then the camera swung down to see him pick up the book or whatever? I would say yes, they got it, or they didn't get it on two takes, they got it on this take. And so those are all things that happen and often are, you know, what the director is asked for.
Right.
And I'm there to be their backup.
Right.
Right. How oftentimes do directors give you their notes, shooting their shot list?
I think on that show, it was probably about 80%. It was high.
Would give you their shot list. Okay.
It was high. Kim Manners was a little more, you know, kept his cards close to his chest. But then, you know, he was a wily veteran. He was, he didn't need me reminding him of his shots. He was so, so prepared in a very minute way. Like he just,
The stories I've heard, I mean, I worked with him, but I don't remember following his process that closely, obviously, as a guest star.
Right.
But the stories I've heard about his notes are that, Rob, he would have a note that said, when you say, hey, Rich, what time is it? I'm on a 40 mil lens over your shoulder.
Yeah.
and that's it. Like, he would just, like, he wouldn't run the whole scene. He's like, he shoots for the edit.
Yes.
He's like, I'm going to be here, and that's all I'm doing.
Yeah.
Oh,
so later on, the editor's like, hey, we're going to grab this. He's like, nope, doesn't exist. Like, he didn't want to be effed with his cut, so he would just shoot for his movie in his head.
So you do just, like, a portion of the scene.
Yes. He would say, if you give it to them, they could use it. So don't give them, don't give them things up if you don't want them to use it. So but also he was in the role of being the supervising producer, executive producer. I can't remember what his actual credit was, but, you know, he's in the position where he can do that. You know, there was always the thing about books being in the guy's jacket, you know, let's say. And it was like, we never had them put a book in their jacket and walk around all the time. They could have.
Right.
If the Kim Manners had said, I always want you to be carrying your props, even if I don't see them, then it would have happened. But, you know, so there's a book, it's in the jacket, but it's not in the jacket until we need to see it come out of the jacket per se. So there's things like that. Like, there's rules for every show that we also are part of, even having that discussion with the directors. I mean, sometimes they'll say, oh, can I have the book like out already? And, you know, we can talk about that in terms of would it happen? Would he leave it out? Things like that.
Right.
So, you know, there's many times that the script supervisor is kind of like the inside knowledge of also the lexicon.
Right. In this episode, the actor Jim Parrick, who plays Nick Monroe in the episode, he's currently has a leading role in 911 Lone Star. Do you remember interacting with him at all on set? I know a lot of the guest actors kind of come and go, but
yeah. I think it was interesting because that episode had a lot of sex.
you're in a strip club for a lot of
There was like a strip club, there was sex scenes, you know, there was very intimate scenarios, you know, so it was a very unusual episode in that
for Supernatural
there was sort of this you know, it was before the days of having an intimacy coordinator, so you know, often it was done with the stunt coordinator. So stunt coordinator would be like, okay, and then they're going to do this.
That's kind of funny if you think about it. It's like, all right, in this scene, you're going to leap from the roof onto your man.
But also it's funny to think that Lou Bolo was the intimacy coordinator.
Yeah, dude.
Which is so funny because, you know, it was like a little Yosemite Sam kind of individual
You know, and then you get to caress her face, and then
you know, like you do,
like you do,
and then.
Well, and you know, it was so funny. You think of, because there was scenes, you know, let's say, okay, Sam and the doctor are kissing, but then they kind of slam up against the window, and you know, that would have had to been discussed. That would have had to, you know, been okay between the two actors. Would have had the discussion with stunts. Things like that. And it's it was an interesting episode because not a lot of interaction because of that fact that there was this intimacy. And also the fact that when they had this big fight sequence, that's all been choreographed. So it's actually a little easier for continuity as long as, you know, we don't break things we're not supposed to break. And, you know, we figure out, he's got to be here for where he lands on the door. It's like how far down the door and all these things. That's kind of continuity for me, but the actual action is choreographed. So they rehearsed it. They usually get it right. And yeah, so a lot of that stuff, we're not interacting. Script supervisors not interacting. I would just interact in lines, usually continuity. But also, let's say if it's, you know, props are in there. If there's a prop, props would be in there. Props is also dealing with their continuity. So it's interesting because that was definitely an episode that had a lot of distance for me.
Gotcha.
Right.
Gotcha. Because of all the action.
Yeah. Action and the
intimacy.
Intimacy parts. And, you know, because they just, not everybody goes in the room. On set, we try and keep it, you know, respectful.
Sure.
And often I am in the room for if it's intimacy things, because there is traditionally often more men than women on set. So I was actually one woman that could be in the room, had a job to be doing. And so I could, you know, female actors or whoever could feel a little more comfortable that there was other people there.
Yeah, for sure.
So
I was uncomfortable. I was watching it on the plane, which is already embarrassing because I was on the show. So it's embarrassing. I'm watching the show on the plane, but I'm watching and all these like the strip club scenes come up, you know? You know?
Don't look at this laptop lady.
Exactly.
Mind your own business.
Right as it, right as that scene pops up, the flight attendant leans over. May I help you, sir?
Exactly.
Never mind. I'll come back.
What can I get you to drink? Some porn, sir.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Oh no.
They know Robbie.
No, it's just a show.
Interesting. I do remember that it was a very focused episode.
Yeah.
You know, I rewatched it and everybody was so focused. Like it was really good in that. It was also different because there, you know, there's moments of comedy, but then there's a lot of deep focus in this episode. So it was a very, I think, smartly written episode because a lot of information had to come out and not all of it could be verbal, you know? And so that was very, very well done in terms of the looks. I mean, it's a lot harder to actually shoot things where people aren't saying things. You have to shoot more coverage. You have to, you know, I know that Charles, you know, let's say was getting in really tight and kind of doing disjointed shots for when the first man was being interrogated by Sam and Dean, and he was talking about killing his wife. And, you know, like, so there's things that Charles chose to do that would have helped visually give storytelling. And Charles was always great about discussing those kind of things. Like, oh, I want to do this kind of look. He would always talk to, obviously, camera operator and Serge, who the DOP of the type of things he wanted. But, you know, I'd also be part of it because I'm like a, you know, another person to see it and remind like, oh yeah. And then when we get to Dean or whoever, we want to do that again. So I've made note of that to myself that, okay, if he doesn't do it, it's a reminder to do it, you know, because whoever knows, but things get busy.
Right.
In your 3 years of doing the show, do any directors stand out as favorites? Obviously, Kim Manners, you were close to. Were there any of the directors that you were like, this was a treat?
Well, I have to say, Kim was funny. You know, funny and focused. And, but I really liked working with Charles.
Charles Beeson is so great.
He was so great. And I come from a British background. And so I really understood his sense of humor. We had many discussions and laughed about things. Like one of our things we'd always say is, you know, when you wake up in the morning, like, well, what if I didn't go today? Like, what would happen? There was all these funny scenarios. He told me funny stories, you know. So that was very good. I was wanting to address one thing that I saw that had been brought up on your Wikipedia page or whatever it is for that they were talking about the time and date on Sam's phone. And the interesting thing is, we have to program those things before we shoot. And so a lot of, at that time, you know, you're dealing with not having the ability to, I don't think we adjusted it. You could do it on computers, but you needed it to be like a specific loop.
Right.
Things like that. So on the phone, the playback.
This is like Friday, August 8th or whatever.
And so I normally would say, what date do we want it? What time do we want it? And I would communicate that to the graphics company that was going to create that for the phone.
Right.
Sometimes I didn't get the opportunity, or, you know, let's say I set a certain time or date, but they didn't, you know, it was too late. It's already been created. So sometimes a lot of those things at that time were random, that people, you know, they were going, oh, I don't know, just make it, you know, 5:56 instead of, things go wrong when you're looking at an insert and you're like, oh, that doesn't work, but it's been created.
Yeah.
And unless you're going to come back and fix it, you know, they'll go, ah, the classic. If they're looking at that, we're doing something wrong.
Right.
That classic.
Yeah, also predates the ability to just go in with a computer and change
correct.
It.
Correct.
You know what I mean?
Correct.
I think you're talking about the Supernatural wiki page, which is, we don't have anything to do with it, but it's
written by somebody named Dave Wiki.
His name's Dave. Very busy.
His name's Dave Supernatural, but then he married a wiki. But, it's fun for fans, I think, because they go there, they see the facts of the episode, and they see the issues, the continuity issues that people might have. I think it's fun for fans to maybe dive in and, you know, but yeah, I think I'm reading it here on my notes, and it says, like, someone said that Dean would still be in hell on that.
I don't even track. I mean, that's a level of minutiae that that fan really has to be committed.
Well, sometimes when we're shooting an episode, we go, look, if someone notices that, they're looking too hard. Or we're not doing our job correctly, because they should be looking at me, not, you know, the date on the phone.
And, you know, but now things are a little different. If rarely do we need to do a green screen on the screen. Like, there's times that we would do green screen, and then visual effects would put in all the data. But and in this particular case, I think it was created by the graphics company, and that's just what it was. And often, you know, they're doing it, they're not thinking of it in terms of that minutia. You know, they're not looking at it and going, oh, this is after that scene, so it should be later, or what time should it be? Normally, props would come to me, or I'd go to props and say, their watches, it should be this. Set deck would come and say, what time do you want on the clock? Like, I'm the person who determines that, or, you know, I usually have a discussion with the director if it's that big a deal. I'm like, is it 5 a.m? Is it, what time do you want it to be?
We had one of those conversations on an episode I was directing, and there was a little bit of a debate where it was like, is it this? Is it that? Script supervisor was doing their best to sort of unravel it. And I was thinking, like, but what would it be? And finally the prop guy goes, here's a solution. And he just took the clock off the wall and walked out. I'm like, yep, all right, now let's shoot. Like, we get rid of it. We won't have to worry about the stupid time. Like,
so
we're going to eat up all
times,
this time.
After many years, they always are dressed in. You know, there's always a clock somewhere, and you're just like, do we need a clock? You know, is it so crucial to have a clock? Because so many times, you know, it's a hassle. Because let's say it's like 8 o'clock. But you don't see the second hand moving, and that's in their background. Like, just get rid of the second hand, or get rid of the clock. Or even in this episode, there was a clock at the very beginning, and it didn't move. We had it, and the second hand couldn't go around, but it was part of the dialogue.
Well, now the episode's ruined for me. Now when I go back, I'll be it. That's all I'll think about.
The second hand isn't going. It's just stuck there. And usually what I try and do, if there's a second hand, is put it right on top of one of the, you know, the other hand, but you right. know, so, sometimes you get lucky, sometimes you don't.
Well, look, I mean, it that is a, again, if it falls under the, if you're looking at that, you're looking too hard. But yeah. I will say, now that people are listening to this, I hope they have a better appreciation about, yeah. for all the people who are like wiki fans or do deep dives on the internet about various details in the episode, just know that before you did that, Patty was doing that. Script supervisors are doing that level of deep dive under yeah. the detail to be sure that it all makes sense and it all tracks. It's just awesome hearing you talk about your role and your story yeah. and your journey with
Patty,
Supernatural.
Thank you so much for joining us today. This has really been great.
Oh, thank you. Yes, yeah, Supernatural was a very fun 3 years, I must say. And
yeah, I remember you now that you were talking to you. I actually do remember you because I used you because in my episode, which we haven't gotten to yet, we're about on it, is I played a writer, a prophet, but I talking about episodes that had already aired and I didn't know those episodes. So I had to ask you to fill me in on what I missed so I knew what I was talking about.
Right.
So,
and many times yeah. that's part of the job also is saying where, yeah. you know, I've created like a story continuity and script continuity as well. And I can say, well, you haven't learned that yet, or you've walked in the door.
Right.
You've just come from having a fight with Joe or whatever.
Well, I'm glad you enjoyed your years there because it's obviously it's one of those shows that's been around forever and has a long storied history. And it's always nice when people had a good experience because that's
yes,
important.
I even am drinking from my Chips Supernatural yeah. Season 2 cup.
Wow.
Nice.
That's amazing.
Which I That's think awesome. Was created by an assistant editor. But yeah, it I've had it for that long.
That's yeah, amazing. That's awesome.
That's amazing.
Speaks to the porcelain. Thank you, Patty, for being here. Really appreciate you and appreciate this
thank
interview.
You.
Thank you, Patty.
Thank you. Okay, thank you so much.
Thank you.
Bye.
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 This is Jared Padalecki stopping in to say hi and let you know that we've got to take a quick break. Thank you for supporting Supernatural then and now. And now, back to the show.
I love that interview, man. She's great. I love getting the deep dive on a department that's rarely discussed. So glad she was able to do this and talk about script supervision, which is not, you know, not something that's tapped into a lot in the interview space.
I found that really fascinating, and I love to hear in the details. I was seriously going off script and asking questions I was curious about.
Yeah, same.
And it's such an important job for in series like this.
It's so critical for actors who are like stumbling on lines or trying to remember what's going on, and it's so critical for directors who are trying to keep 30 plates spinning at the same velocity,
yep.
you know?
Yeah.
So valuable.
Editors and everything. It's just a crucial piece.
And now it's time for a little segment I like to call Mythology! 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 Mythology!
Such a great song.
Thank you, buddy.
Sirens. Originating from Greek myth, their first recorded appearance is in Homer's Odyssey.
Don't!
Not that Homer. Dean says it in the episode. I like the recurring thing that Dean actually is a really good reader. I think that's an interesting through line. So generally, they're thought of as a creature that is half human and half bird and lures sailors to destruction by the allure of their songs.
Ah.
Hey, sailor.
Look at the bird. Odysseus saved his crew by stuffing their ears with wax. You know that?
I didn't, but now I do.
In the Odyssey, there were no descriptions of them. In the 3rd century BC, they were described as part human and part bird. In ancient renderings, there were descriptions of male sirens. Go on. But these disappeared from art around the 5th century BC. When they were depicted with beards, they were called daemons. So we could actually give this episode a couple of daemons.
Yeah. Well, a couple of Matt Damons.
It also makes you think that maybe if we had a male siren in this show, it was a dude from the 5th century BC.
Yeah, that would have made sense.
That would have made sense.
If he would have had a beard, I would have bought it.
By the 8th century AD, they started to look more like mermaids. Their appearance continued in Roman, Christian, and medieval art as a symbol of temptation embodied by women.
Women.
Women. We only know the women part, which is why the whole siren thing was female-centric in this episode and why it threw us off a little bit.
Yeah, yeah. Not a lot of bearded mermaids out there.
Not yet.
Not yet.
And now, here are some fun facts!
If you weren't having fun, now you're going to start.
Fun facts!
Sam's and Dean's FBI aliases are Stiles and Murdoch. Stiles and Murdoch were the main characters of the 1960s TV show Route 66.
Nice.
I didn't know that. And the whole episode, I'm going, Stiles and Murdoch, Stiles and Murdoch. What band is that?
Murdoch. I was thinking Lethal Weapon, Murdoch or something. I couldn't, but I knew that Stiles didn't make sense. So I never got it either.
Right. Yeah. Well, there it is. Route 66 or Route 66, if you go that way.
Go on.
The stripper bar is named the Honey Wagon. In the entertainment industry, a honey wagon is a multi-room trailer used to provide dressing rooms to guest stars and day players. In a historical context, before the advent of plumbing, it was the horse-drawn carriage that carried a large tank and would empty outhouses.
Ah.
All right, and that makes sense because the honey wagon is not the best of the trailers.
No, it's not. Not your favorite trailer. You're more of a triple banger guy.
Yeah. Or a
double banger. I'm not discounting your ability to get a double banger in that contract.
You know me. You know me well.
All right, go on.
Am I doing all of this?
Yeah, because I have to do my job for this one.
Monica Delane, who plays the siren when it's... when it's disguised as a stripper bell, looked up the history of sirens in Greek mythology. in preparation for the episode. This led to her using a soft, seductive voice when speaking and a kind of slithering movement when walking.
This episode has the same name as an episode from Dawson's Creek in which Jensen Ackles played the role of CJ.
No way.
Yeah.
Well, there you go. The siren... in this episode... always takes its stripper names of a Disney princess. Jasmine, Ariel, Aurora, and Belle. Except the male version, Nick.
Nick. All right. The dusty Greek poem Bobby reads has nothing to do with the sirens.
Ooh.
Nice. It is a poem by Simonides about virtue. However, the painting on the opposite page is called... The Fisherman and the Siren.
Ooh.
Or Werewolf by Frederick Leighton.
I really
terrible phoned. Siren.
I really is awful siren. I really phoned.
Ow, ow, ow! Here come the cops.
Kara is one of the select group of women who slept with Sam Winchester. And did not die.
And yet he just walked away like a monster. You know, the monster of this episode wasn't the sirens. It was Sam Winchester.
Yeah. He really, he should have read the tea leaves on that. She didn't die. Maybe she was the one.
Yeah.
Well, heck, Rich, that was a fun laugh there at the end.
It was. I especially like your siren imitation that definitely is not a siren.
Yeah.
Great to be back and doing another podcast, and this was a good one. Even though it's not our favorites, you know, not every episode can be our favorite. Everybody can't have a full beard. That's a lesson in life, kids.
All right, but I'm glad we did it. I'm glad we're here.
Yep,
and I'm excited. We're back in it. We've already watched the next few episodes.
Yeah, man, that's weird, right?
It's really getting good, and we're really gearing up for a really excellent episode coming up.
Well, don't throw in your two cents yet. Come on now.
I'm saying in a couple episodes from now.
I don't know. Jury's out. We'll see.
All right. Well, thanks, everyone. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you next time.
See you next time.
This episode of Supernatural features Jared Padalecki as Sam Winchester, Jensen Ackles as Dean Winchester.
Guest stars included Jim Perrick, Jim Beaver, Jean-Vieve Padalecki, Mate Schwartz, and Mark Hildreth.
Sex and Violence was written by Catherine Humphreys and directed by Charles Beeson.
Editing by Anthony Pinker. Music by Christopher Leonards.
Executive produced by Eric Kripke and Robert Singer.
The original broadcast of the episode featured the following songs: Thunder Kiss 65 by White Zombie, Steal the World by Brian Tichy, Come On Shake by Classic.
Classic. This episode originally aired on February 5th, 2009. This episode of Supernatural Then and Now was hosted and executive produced by Richard Spade Jr. and Rob Benedict.
Produced by Stephen Hine, written by Stephen Hine and Haida Holscher.
And edited and associate produced by Trey Booney.
What is up, Booney?
Music provided by Tim Wynn.
The episode was recorded with the help of Sonic Fuel Studios.
This podcast is from Story Mill Media.
Follow the podcast on Instagram and TikTok at SPN Then and Now.
Become a member of the podcast at www.patreon.com/SPN Then and Now. She tells the man to kill his mother so they can be together, and he does, after making sweet love next to a fire.
With his mother?
No.
Well, don't. You gotta use nouns, not pronouns, in that scenario.
Just for the record, I added the sweet love by the
bleep.
Fire.
Literally, you're like, he kills his mother after making sweet love by the fire. It makes it sound like his mother. Bell. Oh my God, you're a sicko. You're sicker than the sirens.
Okay, how about this? He takes her home, they make sweet love next to the fire, and then she tells him to go kill his mother that he takes care of in the next room.
Yeah, by the way, that was all clear until you went rogue and started improv and adding stuff.
Yeah, well, I won't go rogue anymore. Mm. Sam wants to hunt Lilith, but feels that Dean isn't strong enough.
Story Mill Media.